Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets, which he says are experiencing a 17-year rolling top. Ross examines what's happening with gold, crude, the U.S. and Canadian dollars. He also has a very special offer for our listeners that will help you take advantage of volatile markets. Dr. Mark Fauber joins us from Thailand to give us his opinion of President Trump's tariff war and trade policies. He believes the U.S. dollar has perhaps peaked. He also tells us if gold is still a safe haven in troubled times. Publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter, Robert Campbell, checks in from San Diego to talk about the state of U.S. real estate and how U.S. government staff cuts could affect real estate markets. He also talks about the importance of mental and physical health. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Pleasure to be back, Jim.
Ross, do you have a special offer for our listeners?
Yes. We've been in this raging bull market since either 2009 or 2022, however you want to look at it. And people became so accustomed to just a buy and hold mentality, similar to what we saw in the late 1990s leading up to the dot-com top. And as the markets became fully valued in here the fourth quarter of last year, we've gone into this rolling top formation and, led down now by the Mag 7 stocks and anything pretty much to do with AI. So we're into the transition phase where, opportunities arise in the short term, and rather than just the long-term buy and holds, we take a look at the daily, weekly, and monthly charts. And when we get a combination where our signals kick up in two different time frames, in particular, good oversold readings on the daily and the weekly, you end up with just some really nice moves off the bottom. And since middle of December, in the last 10 weeks or so, looking at the NASDAQ 100 and the S&P 500, and then filtering that down with stocks that have 10 billion more in market cap, we've got 30 stocks that kicked in solid signals, and of those, only four didn't have substantial moves off the bottom that became just great trading opportunities, especially for people that want to do short-term trades with options. The typical call option would make a fairly quick turn, usually within a week or so, and rallies were lasting up to 6 to 8 weeks. So some nice returns on the option trades, and we're going to offer signals as they come up through the service. You can log on to the website, chartsandmarkets.com, and there'll be a link there so that you can try out some of the new items. We did have a couple kick in this week, some big names, and for all that the market as a whole had a bad week, we did see some upside reversals in two stocks that kicked in for us. And, could be the beginning of a pretty decent bounce there. So an add-on service to what we do at Charts and Markets. And hopefully the traders who want to take advantage of it will sign up.
Ross, how would you describe what happened on the stock markets this week?
Well, we pretty much, we had some benchmarks that we've been looking at as part of this 17-year rolling top. And the highs that we put in December, January, were right up with double tops kicking against the significant resistance levels, in particular a Bollinger Band up there, but we've been watching on the S&P 500. Support had been down at the 20-week moving average. That was tested a couple of times late January into February, and it was only going to be a matter of time before we had a deeper correction. And our modeling was showing that we would get down to around the 56.50 on the S&P 500, which is going to be about 8 to 10% off the highs. This week, we did just that. We got to 56.67 on the S&P, so within 17 points after an 8% decline. So that was right on the mark. From a weekly perspective, we have a signal we call a springboard. Looks for oversold conditions within dominant rising trends. That kicked in on the S&P just as it did in the other examples on that 17-year cycle. And that cycle, you know, we're comparing it with 2007, 1990, 1957, 1973, all had similar styles on the tops. And the bounce that we've seen at the end of this week here is just coming from just a perfect price level. We've got some good upside targets on the short term that we published this week. So once again, that's something that subscribers can take a look at. The volatility, as you know, has been rising. The VIX index got up the early part of the week. We had a sequential 9 sell signal in VIX, not a common item at all, and that invariably is part of then a short-term low as far as the equity market is concerned. And so we are seeing that the type of action you'd expect to see from that overbought VIX, you know, with the volatility being high, anxiety being up there, the ratio, the put call ratio, the number of puts that's been bought in this last week is through the roof. Another sign of sentiment that has just gone overboard. So we're ready for a pretty decent bounce in here, and happy to see what's going on. The NASDAQ, the QQQs, have now made a 50% retracement from the lows that we saw in August. They kissed the 50-week moving average, another good support area to be looking at. So this, for all that a lot of people have been anxious, this has been an opportune week to take advantage of things.
What's going on with gold?
The gold market just biding its time up at here, $2,911, consolidating, still looking like the support is more around the 2750 range. We're pretty much adamant on that one. Wouldn't be at all surprised to see it pull back in the second half of this month. Maybe two waves down, a little bit now and then a little bit more towards the end of the month. That wouldn't be at all unusual. Interestingly, some of the big name stocks have been holding up exceptionally well. The Agnicos, the Kinrosses, the Wheaton Precious Metals, Alamos, they've been doing very, very nicely up here. And, you know, you might be looking at those as opportunities on a correction towards the latter part of the month. The juniors, the specs, just biding their time. None of them really getting hit too badly during this last couple of weeks. I'll keep an eye on that. They're the ones that... If gold gets ready to make its next big run, which is still on our work would indicate that that's going to be over 3,000, for the probably the target in the second half of this year. If we have that type of action, I'm sure that the juniors will come to life as well.
What's going on with crude?
Crude stuck, tested $67 again this week, so that's four times in the last 6 months or so, and I wouldn't be at all surprised that to see a decent bounce out of here. We've got some good short-term oversold signals. Interestingly enough, when you take a look at the oil market and relate that over then to our currency, the Canadian dollar, which loves to have leadership that is controlled by the oil market and the commodity indices, we see that this week the dollar held in well, while both the weekly charts on crude and on the CRB moved progressively to some lower lows. That type of bullish divergence probably creates a reasonable low for the Canadian dollar. You know, we had capitulation on the dollar back in December. We've been going through this consolidation with the 20-week and then the 50-week moving averages becoming resistance. And I wouldn't be at all surprised that Canadian gets a little bit of pop out of this low just because of the bullish divergence we're seeing versus oil and the CRB.
Ross, what's going on with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
U.S. dollar has, you know, peaked out around 110. It was just an exceptional move from September. It's now given back a Fibonacci 62% of the rally. There's a head and shoulders top up here, and that measures down to about what we've seen at the tail end of this week. We are getting good oversold readings on the weekly charts. Both our springboard signals are kicking in there. And on an intraday basis, we've got capitulation signals in the dollar index. So I'd expect to see a pretty decent bounce out of here. Not back to new highs, not up around 110 at all. But I think the dollar index is ready for a rally, and that's I think probably in the cards.
Ross, once again, how do we get our hands on that special offer?
Chartsandmarkets.com is the website, and there'll be a link there on the front page.
Ross, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Good to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. Find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Mark Faber, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Dr. Mark Faber, editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report online at gloomboomdoom.com. He's speaking to us from beautiful Chiang Mai, Thailand. Mark, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your program. And I hope all your viewers have a nice beginning of the year and a rewarding beginning of the year.
Yeah. Now, we get a little taste of what it's like to live in Thailand. There's a very popular television show right now called White Lotus, and this season's episodes are in Thailand. And what a beautiful place. I don't know how anybody can get up and leave after being there.
Yes, it's not only a beautiful place. There are many beautiful places in the world. But the people are very, in the north where I live, in the Golden Triangle, people are very laid back. And so the atmosphere is very nice. I mean, you can walk around the street at 4 in the morning or any time, and nobody will assault you. And nobody will insult you. And nobody will argue about the race and colors and whatnot. People live in peace with themselves.
So, business, now, Like I said, I'm just thinking of the beautiful vistas here. How are things at the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report, and how can people subscribe?
Well, things are well, and they can subscribe to the through the website gloomboomdoom.com. I repeat, gloomboomdoom.com, all in one word.
President Trump, Canada, Greenland, the Panama Canal, he wants to take them all over. Your thoughts?
Well, I would have voted twice for Mr. Trump because I think that the alternatives would have been worse. First Hillary Clinton and then Kamala Harris, a complete disaster. But he's not a very intelligent person who thinks through everything well. He's very impulsive, and he says he wants to have this, he wants to have that, like a little child who walks through a toy store. He wants to grab everything. And then, obviously, his advisors go to him and tell him, look, calm down. This cannot be done, and this causes problems, and so forth, and so on. So he has to roll back all his decisions, and in the end, not much happens. This is what my view is. But I agree with him that strategically, if you are the U.S., you should be interested in Greenland, strategically. The Panama Canal, who owns it, is irrelevant, because this is something you can destroy overnight.
President Trump's instituting 25% tariffs against Canada. He says politicians from the prime minister to the premiers of the provinces seem to have no interest in stopping the flow of fentanyl, other drugs, and migrants from Canada into the U.S. Do you think these politicians in Canada would rather fight than do the right thing?
The flow of fentanyl into the U.S. is due to the demand in the U.S., not to the supply. And if the supply doesn't flow through Canada, it will flow through Costa Rica. And if it doesn't flow through Costa Rica, it will flow through Cuba. And if it doesn't flow through Cuba, it will flow through Mexico. And if it doesn't flow from anywhere, it will be manufactured in the U.S., as it has been for years. We have this famous case of the Sackler family and Purdue Pharmaceutical. Fentanyl is not an invention of somebody unusual. It's done. It's been invented in the U.S.
That there are rumors Canada's under the control of the Chinese Communist Party. What are you hearing?
This is complete nonsense. Nobody controls an idiot like Trudeau.
Ukraine, a victim or a crime scene?
It is not difficult to tell. For sure, it is a war theater, crime scene, and a money machine for corrupt Western politicians in Europe and the United States and the middleman who sit in the Middle East. I hope it's not difficult to figure out in which country in the Middle East they sit.
What are your thoughts on the Department of Government Efficiency in the U.S. run by Elon Musk?
Of course, the bureaucracy needs a thorough cleaning. But can it be done? That is the question. In my opinion, what they've done so far is to scratch the surface. It has to go much, much deeper, and it would, in my opinion, it will take 5 years minimum.
Do you think the U.S. stock markets are headed for a major correction?
Yes, I think I wrote a report at the beginning at the end of November, entitled The Trump Top. I think we need to distinguish two sorts of inflation: the asset inflation and the consumer good inflation. What we had since 1981-82 is an asset inflation that went far beyond anyone's imagination. In other words, the prices of stocks, real estate, and so forth went up much more than people dreamt in the early 1980s. And by the years, 2024, 2025, people got used to the idea that stocks and properties always go up, when in fact each market is subject to fluctuations. And what we have now is a different environment because from 1980-81 onwards, we were in an environment of declining interest rates. After May 2020, we are in an environment of increasing interest rates and increasing consumer price inflation. And so the investment environment has changed. In other words, people get used to the rules of the game, but then suddenly the rules change and the people, the investors, still play by the old rules, and then they lose a ton of money. The two most widely held stocks among individual investors in America were Nvidia and Tesla. And my view in the world of investments is always avoid crowded trades. Avoid crowded trades, because that's where the vulnerability exists, because the expectations are exaggerated. They're way too high. The expectations are very high. And so it doesn't have to be a disappointment, but just that the expectations are not quite met by the reality. And what we've seen so far, we've seen sharp drops in Tesla and in Nvidia, sharp drops.
Is it more important in uncertain times to just be able to hold on to your money rather than focus on making profits?
In my view, already 2 months ago, people should have shifted their sight or their strategy and say, of course I have to invest my money, but my objective is now to preserve capital and not to make money. Just preserve what I've made. Because if you haven't made money in the last 20, 30 years, you're already a dumb investor, because everything went up. So if you haven't made any money, it's unlikely that you will start to make money suddenly now. And if you made a lot of money, you should ask yourself, I've made so much money, this is unusual. This is not the typical pattern of history that you make every year between 8 and 10% profit. More likely it's like 5% or maximum, and so forth. So anyway, I think the strategy should be preserve your capital.
Do you see strength in the U.S. dollar ahead?
No, I see weakness ahead.
What would be the cause of that?
You shouldn't ask for causes. Mm-hmm. We will know one day the causes. The dollar or anything starts to move before anybody knows why. The question of why will be answered much later, maybe in 6 months' time. But one thing I can tell you, if I compare the price level in the U.S. to the price level elsewhere. So it strikes me that the price level in the U.S. is much higher than anywhere else, and the cost of manufacturing in the U.S. is much higher than anywhere else, except in agriculture. In agriculture, the U.S. is competitive. In other industries, no.
Your thoughts on gold?
My gold view has not changed in the last 40 years, and this is anybody who is responsible for himself and his family should own some physical gold. Has never changed, and I've been on your program for at least, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Each time you ask me about my view on gold, and each time I told you individuals should own some gold, not because it will go up sensationally or whatnot, simply because it's a safe investment. And it is against the robbers, the bandits that sit at central banks around the world.
And
the criminals that sit at central banks, because they destroy the value of paper money.
Your thoughts on silver?
Same, positive. But, I mean, you know, I'm saying this, after gold and silver had a good year, we are up on gold by 11% this year, and silver a little bit more than 11, while the Dow Jones is flat. Yes, the Dow Jones is essentially flat. The S&P is down 3%, and the Nasdaq is down 7%. So gold has done relatively well last year and this year.
Could interest rates and inflation play a big role going forward?
They always play a big role.
Is President Trump's drill baby drill plan designed to lower the price of crude?
I think the price of crude depends on so many factors that are of geopolitical nature that his program does not have a huge impact.
President Trump has focused on critical minerals and rare earths. Is this bullish for the critical minerals and rare earths markets?
Let's put it, it's relatively positive.
What do you think the real rate of inflation is now?
Well, that is a good question. First of all, every household has a different rate of inflation, depending in which country they live, depending on the composition of the household and so forth. But I'd say that in countries like the U.S. and Canada, the true rate of cost of living increases of a typical household, say mother, father, two children, is probably in the range of around 7%, 7 to 10% per annum.
And pensioners in Canada got a 2% increase in their pay.
Yes, of course, the government will cheat on publishing the true rate of price increases because they're heavily indebted, and so they have an interest to keep interest rates artificially low. Or, as I would say, they have an interest to keep interest rates negative in real terms in order to support the asset market.
Are tariffs a good weapon to bring fairness back to the system?
Tariffs are a horrible economic policy. Horrible. And an unfair and regressive form of taxation. Nothing else. And they've been dismantled over centuries because they hinder the development of international trade and even local trade. I mean, in theory, you could have a tariff between Vancouver and Toronto or Vancouver and Ottawa or Quebec or whatever, you understand? It's a horrible measure. And it's a very childish way to look at the world, to try to introduce tariffs, to improve your condition by introducing tariffs. You worsen your condition. You make it worse than before. Believe me. I never studied that much, although I had a PhD in economics with the age of 24. But the one thing I learned when I wrote my thesis, which was about the financial reform of Sir Robert Peel, and this was precisely about the repeal of the Corn Laws and the Navigation Acts and so forth. This is a subject I'm quite familiar with, the arguments of among the free traders, like Richard Cobden, and then the counter-arguments among the landed gentry in England that wanted to protect the Corn Laws because it kept prices artificially high. Anyway, I want to tell you tariffs are unfair and unproductive. And it doesn't make any economic sense on whatever view. However, there are some countries that have protectionism, like we in Switzerland for agriculture, because we think the country shouldn't be just one huge factory. We should have mountain areas with farms, and we should have in the Midlands, we should have some farmland to keep the countryside beautiful. So these are different, but these are not economic measures. These are measures to protect the country as it was 100 years ago.
President Trump is going to allow increased logging in national parks. Is that a good idea?
I have no idea whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, because I happen not to know everything. So I'm telling you, I can't answer questions about which I have no idea.
Will tariffs bring back heavy manufacturing to the U.S.?
No.
How does 2025 look for housing markets in Canada and the U.S.?
I think the housing market is in a colossal bubble. And the problem is they push prices so high that the affordability is now very low. You understand? Young people who have a job and they start working, they cannot afford to buy a house or rent an apartment in a nice neighborhood in Toronto or Vancouver. Look, I'll give you an example. When I started to work in 1970, at the time in Zurich, I could rent with my salary an apartment right in the center of the city. It happened to be next to the practice. My father was a famous medical surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, specializing in sports medicine. He had all the soccer players and the cyclists, the world champions, and so forth. Anyway, so I was in the center of the city in an apartment, and I paid precisely less than 10% of my salary on my apartment. Nice apartment. I paid about 6% of my salary. I challenge you to find me anywhere in the world, a major city, where people with their starting salaries can rent an apartment in a nice neighborhood with less than 30% of their salaries.
And in Vancouver, it could be 80 or 90% of your salary.
Yes, of course. It's crazy. The young people can't afford it. That's a huge problem. Affordability. But the central bank, as I told you, A, they're dumb like the moon. Actually, that's an understatement. C, Secondly, they are criminals. They want to depreciate the purchasing power of money. And they cheat people by telling them the inflation rate is something like 2%. They're liars, they're dishonest, and they're incompetent. That's the definition of a central banker nowadays.
We're seeing more and more electric vehicles on the road. Do you think the EV market will continue to grow?
No. I think it's a complete scam. The electric car is causing huge environmental damage and damaging the roads as well.
Would Canada be better off being a republic instead of a constitutional monarchy?
Again, I don't know. I am against democracies. I'm against that everybody can vote.
What kind of system works best?
I think an accountable government that is like a dictator or a ruler, a king or an emperor, but that he has some accountability. I think that's the best.
Has election fraud put people in places of power all over the world?
I think there is a lot of election fraud, and I think elections can be manipulated. And I think that there's too much money involved in the election process.
Would it be fairer to use, say, blockchain for voting to ensure that it's secure?
I don't know. That I don't know. I can't judge that because blockchain, there can be fraud.
Mm-hmm. Is the corruption and fraud being uncovered by Doge likely a template for the corruption and fraud going on in countries all over the world?
Each country has a bureaucracy. The moment you have bureaucracies, and I must point out this is a theory of the state. You know, how do you build a society? How do you build a society that is relatively honest and that has a high moral code, a high moral value? Because capitalism is built on some morality. No morality, you don't get a capitalistic system. Now, the thing is this. In a bureaucracy, of course, the bigger the bureaucracy, the more corruption there is. In private business, there's less corruption because I have a business and you have a business and your friends have a business and we all compete with each other. And so the corruption doesn't come up that much because it would diminish our competitiveness. So we are relatively clean. We're not 100% clean, but we are relatively clean. But the bureaucracy breeds corruption. The bigger the bureaucracy, the bigger the corruption. And I always say, honest government, they have, say, expenditures of, say, $1 trillion. Honest government, 5% is stolen. But on $1 trillion is a lot of money. And dishonest government, they steal, say, 50-60% of the money. And completely dishonest government, and you can then edit this out because I'm a racist, dishonest government like you have in Africa, they steal everything. Nothing gets done with the money. So anyway, so you have this range of between honest, 5% is stolen and completely dishonest, 90% is stolen, 100% is stolen. And the U.S., I suppose, about 10 to 20% is stolen. But the budget of the U.S. is $7 trillion. So 10% of $7 trillion is a lot of money, $700 billion that is stolen every year.
Could the climate change narrative have been created to facilitate large-scale money laundering?
Maybe, but it's not the subject I followed. I just think that it's a complete scam.
Climate change being blamed on man, it's something that occurs naturally. The biggest factors are solar activity, the Earth's orbit, volcanic activity, and asteroid hits. How do higher taxes on carbon affect any of those?
I don't know. I'm just telling you, I'm not so interested in this climate change BS. I think the climate has been changing for the last billions of years. There were periods of high temperatures and periods of freezing and ice ages and so forth. And I don't think that the temperature today is much warmer than, say, 50 years ago. Maybe it's a little bit warmer, but you wouldn't notice it as a human. Now, it's a fact that in some areas of the world, the glaciers have been retreating. I mean, it's very evident to me in Switzerland, because I used to spend a lot of time in the mountains, and I can see that the glaciers have retreated. But why they retreat is not entirely clear to me. And the scientists also debate that question.
Are you seeing gloom, boom, or doom ahead?
For what?
I guess for the world economy.
The global economy is humming along, but not strong. And in my view, peak economic activity was 2018-2019. We had the COVID slump, a recovery, but we never quite recovered to the peak in 2018. And, you know, there are different things. You ask me, how is the world for the 1,000 richest people in the world? To this question, I say, yeah, for them, it's improved because the stock market went up, asset prices went up, and they earn more and their wealth has increased. And how is the world for the 70% of the middle class and the lower classes of American society? It's not as good as it was 10 years ago because the cost of living have gone up more than their salaries. And their wealth hasn't increased much because they didn't have much to start with. So that's why I say, you ask, is it gloom, boom, or doom? Depends for whom and depends for what. In 2023, cocoa prices went ballistic and now they've been easing. In 2024 and this year, coffee prices went ballistic. So for those people, it went well. But now the outlook is changing. And, you know, the unusual fact is simply that gold has gone up a lot. And the gold miners have, by and large, been a disastrous investment. There hasn't been a good investment over the last 10 years. So it's a very complex world, and I'm repeating what I said. People should start to preserve their capital. We are going to get a lot of volatility. It will be a difficult trading environment. A lot of money will be lost. A lot. Just ask Elon Musk and his Tesla stock.
Mark, where can people follow you and subscribe to the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report?
At the website gloomboomdoom.com. I repeat, gloomboomdoom.com, all in one word, or they can give in my name, Mark Farber.
Does the world need to become a lot more like Thailand?
Thailand is a failed state, but most visitors love it. We have a very high number of retirees that come and retire in Thailand. And everybody feels happy when they're in Thailand. So I ask myself, maybe we Westerners must adopt or change the definition of what a failed state is. Maybe failed state should be replaced by a state that just doesn't grow much, but has a high value about the quality of food and the atmosphere and the personal life, I suppose. So, I don't know. You know, the world is a complex place. And in the last few years, unfortunately, because of the money printing by central banks, we have a whole community, the investment community, that dances around the golden calf instead of trying to live a peaceful and a life full of self-contentment. But I don't want to get into the philosophical part of our discussion. I'm just saying that central banks have caused an enormous damage on the world and on Western economic development. The West has gone down like a sinking ship relative to the rest of the world over the last 40 years. And it's going to continue. And under Trump and his policy, in my view, it will accelerate.
Mark, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest has been Dr. Mark Fauber, editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report online at gloomboomdoom.com. He was speaking to us from Chiang Mai, Thailand. Coming up, Robert Campbell, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Robert Campbell, publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter, his website realestatetiming.com. He's speaking to us from beautiful San Diego. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thank you for having me back, Jim.
Can you tell us about the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter?
Yeah, it's a newsletter that I publish for paid subscribers, and it's based on a book I wrote 25 years ago or so, called Timing the Real Estate Market. And I developed a formula, a model for predicting, you know, the ups and downs of U.S. real estate prices. And it's very accurate. It's accurate about 80 to 90% of the time. And after I wrote the book, I started a newsletter, and that's what I do intellectually.
Where can people subscribe?
They go to realestatetiming.com.
Is your book, Timing the Real Estate Market, still valid today?
Absolutely. It's right. I mean, it works today just as well as it ever did. Market conditions have changed, but if there was something to change, change in the model that, you know, that would make a big difference, I would change it. There's some new things I've come across in the years that help you with the big picture. Mine shows you more short-term oriented, what's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months out, even though real estate does tend to trend. But there's other things too, but it's still amazingly accurate.
President Trump and Elon Musk are shaking things up with federal government layoffs and the cutting of government spending. Could this affect the economy, real estate, and the stock markets? There's a big question.
Absolutely.
For you.
Yeah. All of the above.
Yeah.
The economics of it, that we're going into a recession right now. I mean, we've been going into it for like the last 2 or 3 or 4 months. The three month 10-year yield curve inverted, so that means it's going to happen. And slowly we're starting to see deterioration in employment and GDP growth estimates, what estimates are. And if Trump and Musk are successful, even partially successful, in reducing government waste by eliminating government jobs and inefficiencies and that kind of things, we could see a lot of government workers unemployed hit the market, you know, because it's you don't have to spend that much. That's the reason we have a financial problem, a big problem. It's waste. You don't need that many people. And also there's corruption in it. So let's just say that they eliminate $1 trillion out of the US economy, and the deficit goes from 2 trillion down to 1 trillion. That's $1 trillion worth of consumption that's getting sucked out of the US economy. That's a lot. And so you could just see that, you know, businesses aren't going to do the same business as before because people aren't going to have jobs and they're not going to have the money. So this there's some really important things to think about right now, you know, with respect to these guys doing that. And are they serious about it? Yeah, I'd say they're serious about it. I said they're very serious about it. So that could have some very, very negative effects on the U.S. economy, which is what we need anyway. But we could have short-term pain like that and just let the chips fall where they may, like they did in the 1920s, and let all the dead wood die and get burned away. And then all of a sudden, with all that gone, we could have an economic recovery like you've never seen before. I mean, because that's what happened in the 20s. In the early 20s, we had a terrible recession. And no government intervention, no bailouts. Everything just kind of collapsed for a year, a year and a half. And after that, the U.S. economy had the highest annual GDP growth I think ever recorded. But see, you got it, you guys. What you got to do is you got to endure the pain, get rid of the bad actors, get rid of the dead wood, so that all of a sudden, so that you know things can get revitalized. So I think they're going to eliminate a lot of jobs, and I don't know what those people are going to do on the market. You know, especially if we get into a recession by itself, that's going to be a self-fulfilling strategy. Fire these guys; they're not getting jobs, and now you go into a recession. So yeah, I do think it's going to go into a recession.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you work for the National Park Service, I don't see a big demand for people with degrees in forest management.
Go green. I could see forest management because what we had in California. Somebody's got to take charge and making sure that we have a little more competent risk management. But you know, some other things, you know, a lot of people are going to lose their jobs. And what are they going to do? I mean, and nobody wants to talk about this. They're going to go, oh, we're going to find new endeavors for them. That's not, all of a sudden Honda's going to start building a new factory somewhere in the U.S. and that'll be 20,000 jobs. Those 20,000 jobs are probably at least a year or two or three away. People are going to start losing their jobs and their money like right now. That's what they're doing. So that's going to drive the U.S. economy into recession.
Won't a lot of those lost jobs be replaced by AI? There won't be any jobs to come back to?
Or? You know what? I'm not the person to ask about that. I barely understand AI. I had like Copilot come on my computer, and I had to have one of the kids remove it. They did it without my permission. But AI, I have no idea. I think it's going to really negatively affect a lot of industries that are black and white, one of which includes the legal profession. You don't need an attorney for half that stuff. Just, you know, give them a question and say, you know, or produce a rental agreement for me, or, you know, hey, what's the rule on this, this, or this? It'll give you the law. Just shoot it back at you. You don't have to talk to an attorney at, you know, $300-$500 an hour or whatever they charge. So I think that could affect that there. But, you know, for most people, it's not, if you're not very smart and you don't know how to write and you don't know numbers, maybe you can use AI for a while to maybe fool an employer that you get a job or some other capacity. But if you don't measure up personally, if you can't do that on your own, you're going to be toast. So, I mean, the guy's going to, like my dad always used to say, he goes, charm will get you anywhere for 15 minutes. Then you better know what the F you're doing. And it's the same kind of thing. I mean, you know, is it going to help stupid people be rich and happy? No, it's not. No, it's not. Sorry. You know, some things you have to do on your own. You just can't fake it behind some machine that's writing your emails or your thesis or your book reports for you. Eventually, you have to perform. And that, you know, and if you can't perform, you're going to lose your job. Nobody's going to hire you.
Could geopolitics have an effect on home prices in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think so, because the whole world is so interconnected. You know what? I mean, the U.S. is the biggest player in that game. So what's happening in the U.S. is more likely to happen anywhere else. I mean, geopolitics, yeah, maybe World War III. I think that would certainly have an effect. Inflation would go shooting up. And real home prices wouldn't keep up with it. But you don't want to see things like that.
The Dow retested the 45,000 level in late January. The NASDAQ retested 20,000 in February. The S&P 500 hit new all-time highs in mid-Feb. The Russell 2000 did a retest of 2,400 in late December. Does it look now like the U.S. stock markets want to head higher or lower?
I would say, the numbers speak for themselves, but if we're going into recession, it's going to have a negative impact on the stock market, for sure. Because it always does. One thing about bull markets, trends of rise for rising prices can last years and years and years and years. But on the way down, it happens much faster. So we haven't had a big market correction in a long time since 2009. So what are we? That's 15 years. 15 years without a market crash. That's a long time. We're going to have stock market crashes, we're going to have real estate crashes, especially at these highly elevated levels. And if the economy turns down, the stock market's going to turn down.
When stock markets head lower, do home prices usually head lower?
That's not a good timing indicator. The most likely answer is yes. Housing prices will go lower. But do they react immediately? No, they don't. And I talked about this in my January timing letter. No, there's a lead time, So as soon as you hear about the economy going into recession, if you're so inclined, should you go out and run out immediately and sell your house? And the answer is no.
Are you seeing indicators any U.S. housing markets are weakening?
Yeah, they're slowly weakening over the last 6 to 12 months. The annual rate of growth keeps dipping. It's not negative by any means, at least for the country as a whole, keeps dipping lower and lower and lower, the growth rate. So prices are going higher and higher in most areas, but at a slower rate of change. So obviously the rate of change has to come to zero before you stall out, the nose falls, and you go into a downturn, but we're not there yet.
Whether housing markets are in a bull or bear market, do the banks always win?
In the past, they have, and they probably still will. Yeah, the banks rule the world. They do. They rule the world. I said this 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Just look at them. They never go, anytime the banks get in trouble, and get into problems, they get bailed out every single time. Most of the big banks, especially the big banks. So, it's like they, the people that own the banks and run the banks are super wealthy people, and they have a lot of influence, so they get what they want. See, that's because people, if you let the banks fail, then all that's going to do is just make whatever the economic downturn is that much worse. And that's why they try to minimize the downfall. Oh, we can't let the banks go drop. Why not? They're loaded with these bad loans. What are you going to do with them? Oh, we'll buy them from them. That kind of crap. Free markets are always the best. That's rarely the case.
The front runner for the Liberal Party leadership in Canada, who would automatically become Prime Minister of Canada, replacing Justin Trudeau, Mark Carney, is a former Bank of Canada governor and a former Bank of England governor. Should Canadians be wary of a person who spent all their life as a high-placed banker?
100%.
And the Vancouver
new guy in there.
Yeah. In the Vancouver area, we're seeing more and more electric vehicles, not just Teslas, but many other brands. Are you seeing the same in San Diego?
Well, I'm not an electric vehicle guy. I don't have an electric vehicle. But where I live, about, I would say 20% of the cars are Teslas. It's amazing. 20% run around those electric cars. And I don't know if they've changed or haven't changed, because I'm not in that market anymore. But that's all I know. I'm not gonna buy a Tesla because it looks ugly, and I don't buy ugly things.
Ha 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 ha. If you're right-handed, how tough is it to become left-handed?
It's tough. It's very tough because for those of you that don't know me, I broke my right elbow and can't throw a baseball or football anymore. So I have to learn how to throw left-handed if I still want to do those things. I'm not ready for pickleball yet by any means. So I'm learning to throw left-handed, and it's quite a challenge. It's all practice, and you know what? It's like when you throw right-handed, if that's what you've done all your life, you don't even have to think about it. When you throw left-handed, you're starting out, you have to think about everything. Like, okay, what, you know, that all of a sudden everything's the reverse. How's my momentum going through? How far do I rear back? My front foot, when do I release the ball relative to my front foot? Then after you release the ball, the follow through, all that kind of stuff. It's like hitting a golf ball. Anybody that's ever, if you've ever learned how to hit a golf ball, hitting a golf ball the first time and learning how to use a driver, it takes a long time to do that well. Throwing with the opposite hand, it's way harder than that. So it is harder, but it's a huge, huge challenge, and I'm getting better all the time, and I know I'm going to be able to do it. So, but the only 1 in 10 people is left-handed in the United States. And interestingly, about left, some interesting notes about left-handed people is that 20% of all Mensa IQ candidates are left-handed. 20%, and versus only 10% of the total U.S. population. So, the left-handed people, you might conclude, are smarter than right-handed people.
What does that make me? Because I write right, throw left. I want to drive a golf ball right, but I putt. I want to putt left because I shoot left playing hockey.
So you're ambidextrous.
Or I like to say amphibious because I like to swim, but semi-ambidextrous, okay, yeah.
Can you throw equally well with either arm?
Underhand, I can.
Okay.
I can pitch underhand either right or left.
The
And I can bowl with both hands too.
the mechanics of throwing a baseball, Jim. There's a lot of mechanics. It's just not like a kick. I mean, kicking a ball. There's mechanics there. But throwing a baseball and throwing it far, I mean, there's weight transfer. You're pulling back, and all of a sudden, you lift one leg up. You push forward while you're bringing your arm back. When the leg hits the ground, you're following through with your arm, through with your arm, and then your motion, your momentum is supposed to take you forward where your body almost spins. That's a lot of stuff, and if you've never done it in your life, you should try it. It's really a mental challenge, guys, that you want to all of a sudden you say, I can do this, because it defies all your normal thinking mentally, because all of a sudden you have to concentrate on it, like, okay, this foot has to be back, this has to be back, and it's just the opposite of what you've done for your whole life. But so it's, I can't wait till I'm back in a baseball league.
Is mental toughness needed to avoid just being one of the herd?
Yeah, it really is. To succeed in life, you have to be not only physically tough. I mean, we're talking about health and fitness, but you have to be mentally tough. Mentally tough, and it has so many positive advantages to be physically fit, which can help you get mentally fit. That it seems to me that it's a huge advantage as far as success goes. Huge. It just gives you confidence, and that kind of stuff. So it's but that mental fitness it's really important. You can't say no to anything. You just got to go. I can do this. I can do this. Good. They go, are you sure? I can do this. Just watch. That's mental toughness.
What about physical fitness?
Well, physical fitness, I mean, you're not going to be mentally strong if you're not physically strong. So the first thing is get yourself physically in shape. And now all of a sudden it starts going into your brain where, you get more confident, you're faster, you look good, the opposite sex likes you more, and you're just performing at a higher level with more energy and everything. So physical fitness is the foundation for the whole thing. Get physical. I'm not talking about bodybuilder stuff. I'm talking about, you know, just that us men, like keeping ourselves in shape, you know, going to the gym. I go to the gym once every 2 days, sometimes 3 days. So I lift all the time. I also, you know, out doing hard cardio all the time. And that's what it takes, guys. And here's the secret. If you want to be everything you can be, you have to be physically and mentally fit. To be physically and mentally fit, you can't stop, ever. There's no beginning and end. You just got to keep it going all the way. You just got to keep pushing, doing new things, trying new things, and you know what? And reaching all the time. That's very, very healthy, and it keeps you young, and it's you'll live a long life.
Bob, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on that we haven't talked about yet?
For those of you that don't follow the gold market, I would start doing that. I've been a gold bug for a long time, you know, 20, 30 years, and I've always liked gold. For a lot of reasons, not because of it's an inflation hedge. I mean, it does well over long periods of time, but more as a just kind of it's the kind of investment that you can cash it in and get. I mean, you could take your gold coins, take them down to the coin store, and get cash within 24 hours, just like that. Like with real estate, which is where I've made, you know, the vast majority of my money, you can't cash in. You want to sell something, that can be a hard process. So gold's very liquid, and I believe that it's real money. I know. Again, I'm dating myself. How I'm like old school guys. You know, that all this funny money, funny credit and that kind of stuff right now, and that kind of stuff is that, you know, I know how to profit from it, but I think it's ruining our country.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us and being on This Week in Money.
Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Robert Campbell, publisher of the Campbell Real Estate Timing Letter. His website, realestatetiming.com. He was speaking to us from San Diego. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Dr. Mark Fauber, and Robert Campbell. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.